Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Wednesday, October 30th, 2013. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Study shows high number of Idaho parolees and probationers return to prison. Ponda Ray School District to drop discussion of arming teachers. And Whitman County Sheriff Brett Myers outlines his concerns about the new recreational cannabis system in Washington to the Pullman City Council. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Lake Pendere School District Superintendent Sean Woodward in Sandpoint has said the district will no longer pursue the idea of secretly arming some teachers and school staff as a strategy to prevent tragedies like the Sandy Hook school mass shooting in Connecticut. Woodward told the Spokesman Review website the school board is divided on the issue and most school staff members do not support the idea. He said a survey of school district teachers showed 8% support and 14% support from overall district classified staff. The proposal was floated by school board chair Steve Youngdahl this month, who argued having armed school staff members would specifically help in the five district schools located in rural parts of Bonner County. Youngdahl said police response times there could be as long as 20 minutes. A Center for Justice and Pew Charitable Trust study has found while 41% of Idaho prisoners are in for parole and probation violations, the rate in Idaho eclipses most other states. For example, the number of prisoners in North Carolina that return because of parole and probation violations is 21%. The study found nearly a third of the felony offenders initially sentenced to short prison terms or probation returned to serve full prison terms within 3 years of release or sentencing. Speaking to a group of Idaho legislators today, Justice Center Program Director Mark Pelka said, "You could spend less on prisons and corrections if you received better outcomes from supervision. If you can do that right, you will see less cost, you will see less people coming to prison, and you will see less crime." The numbers were striking, especially in light of data showing Idaho has one of the lowest crime rates in the country. However, the state's prison population grew by 10% between 2008 and 2012. Democratic Representative Shirley Ringo of Moscow, a member of the legislature's Justice Reinvestment Interim Committee, which met today, said, "Given some of our budgeting challenges, it should be of great concern to all of us to find out that it is clear we could be more efficient and save a lot of money. I've always thought that moving forward, more community treatment is more cost-effective and more humane. I think this is something we've needed to do for a long time." Republican Representative Luke Malik of Coeur d'Alene said he's intrigued about any proposed policy changes that will make probation more successful. The average cost of health care per inmate in Idaho prisons rose 24% between 2001 and 2008, part of a nationwide trend. A Pew Charitable Trust study examined Federal Bureau of Justice statistics for 44 states and found in 42 of them, health care spending for prisoners rose an average of 52%. It's not just rising medical costs making the cost of health care increase in prisons. The number of inmates has also grown, the population is aging, and there has been a rise in chronic and communicable diseases inside prisons. The report makes four recommendations for ways states can save money on prison health costs. Patients could consult with doctors off-site over video instead of arranging for in-person visits. Elderly and ill patients could receive early parole. States could outsource prison health care to private corporations. And states could adopt the expanded Medicaid coverage of affordable Care Act and cover costs of caring for sick inmates required to leave the facility and be treated in a hospital. The Idaho Board of Correction just renewed a contract with Corizon Health Incorporated to provide mental and medical health care, despite the fact a court-appointed expert in a decades-long lawsuit over prisoner health care in Idaho concluded a year ago the standards of medical care at least one Idaho prison constituted cruel and unusual punishment. The state is also turning down the federal Medicaid expansion that is part of the Affordable Health Care Act. Former director of Medicaid under President George W. Bush, Dennis Smith, denounced the idea of putting prisoners on Medicaid, accusing the states who do so of using a loophole to foist their responsibility to care for inmates onto the federal government. The Washington Department of Corrections is asking Governor Jay Inslee to put an additional $1.8 million in the department budget over the next 2 years to begin planning prison expansion projects. Ultimately, the department wants to spend $17 million to tear down some obsolete vacant housing and build a new 96-person unit at the women's prison in Purdy. The department is also looking at a $175 million renovation of the former Maple Lane Youth Detention Center at Grand Mound to convert the facility into a prison to house 1,000 men. The women's prison at Purdy currently houses 900 inmates, some of them sleeping on the floor because the prison capacity is less than 800. Another 400 female inmates are housed at the Mission Creek Correction Center for Women at Belfair. Part of the reason for Washington's prison overcrowding stems from closure of three prisons since 2009 in Yakima, Medical Lake, and McNeil Island, while the only space added during that time came from a Washington State Penitentiary addition that housed an additional 120 men. Washington's prison population is about 16,000. Washington already has a system in place to allow nonviolent sex and drug offenders to serve their time through work release centers and has little hope to further reduce the prison population with early releases because those who remain incarcerated are violent offenders. Idaho County Commissioners have renewed their $5,000 per year membership in the American Lands Council, which Commissioner Jim Chmielik praised for building coalitions and mounting the coordinated effort across the board to work to get state control over federal lands in Idaho. The Utah-based American Lands Council's webpage describes the organization's goal of securing and defending local control of land access, land use, and land ownership of public and private lands. A surveillance video outside Boosters coffee shop allowed Moscow police to identify a suspect in a series of vehicle prowls. Police arrested 32-year-old Patrick Everett at a residence in the 400 block of Grant Street and found most of the items reported stolen from a vehicle on the 800 block of East 7th Street on Monday. Police Chief David Duke told the Daily News in the process of searching for Everett, two more arrests were made on West Palouse River Drive. 40-year-old Denise Davis Miller was arrested for failure to comply warrants and for possession of a controlled substance and driving irregularities. 48-year-old Wilbur Britton was arrested for delivering methamphetamine and illegal possession of a firearm. Schweitzer Engineering has announced plans to slow down an expansion project at its Lewiston facility that currently employs 220 people. Company founder Edmund Schweitzer said in an email the company has lowered its growth forecasts because of uncertainty in the economy, but overall, the company is healthy and busy. Schweitzer Engineering spokesperson Tammy Lewis said the 140,000-square-foot building in Lewiston is about 85% complete. The company isn't scheduling a date to move into the expansion, but it's likely to be around June of next year. No members of the public spoke at a Pullman City Council hearing last night about Pullman's six-month moratorium on licensing cannabis-related businesses as Washington rolls out its recreational cannabis program. After no one spoke at the hearing, Whitman County Sheriff Brett Myers briefed the council on the problems he is worried about as the new law takes effect. Myers said he is concerned about the separate sets of rules for medical and recreational cannabis users, which he said leave a lot of room for abuse. Myers said, "It is not that hard to get permission to use medical marijuana in the state, and medical marijuana users are allowed to possess a 60-day supply up to 1.5 pounds of processed cannabis, while recreational users can only have 1 ounce at a time. With recreational marijuana growing, processing, and retail businesses yet to be licensed, he said there's an opportunity for black market operators to funnel medical marijuana to recreational users. Legislators will likely consider a recommendation from the Liquor Control Board to reduce the amount of medical marijuana a person can have at one time, but medical marijuana advocates vow to fight such a measure. Even if new regulations were to pass, Meyer said, it would be a year before they took effect, so the county will have to deal with the rules as they are for a while. Myers told the council he also worries recreational cannabis may be taxed so high that black market operators won't be driven out of business. He also said enforcement costs will go up because officers will no longer be able to identify marijuana by visual inspection alone to verify that confiscated material contains 0.3% THC or more. Samples will have to undergo a $500 test. The Whitman County Auditor's Office is overseeing the process of replacing incorrect ballots to ensure that votes are counted properly and the privacy of voters is protected. The ballot error stemmed from the post-2010 census redistricting project, which should have caused a few small pockets of Precinct 235 to move, but ballots were sent out as if the whole precinct had been moved. The error was discovered when uncontested city council candidate Jeff Hawbaker received a ballot on which he was not listed. Residents who have already filled out and sent in ballots and then receive a new one are being asked to send in the new one as well. When they do, it will replace the previous one. Residents who do not send in a replacement ballot will have their city council vote voided, but votes in other elections will be counted. Clearwater Paper intends to challenge a $300,000 whistleblower lawsuit filed by the U.S. Department of Labor in district court yesterday. The complaint alleges the company retaliated against former employee Anthony Tenney, who raised concerns about workers being exposed to excessive levels of red cedar dust. According to the complaint, in April and May of 2010, Tenney spoke with his immediate supervisor and contacted Occupational Health and Safety Administration officials. The agency investigated and did not issue any citations. The complaint alleges Tenney was suspended without pay on June 21, 2010 and required to take a drug test. He was fired 4 days later, and then 4 days after that, he filed a whistleblower complaint with OSHA. Clearwater Paper spokesperson Matt Van Vliet said the company encourages employees to speak up about health and safety concerns and the company will vigorously fight in federal district court. Acting OSHA Regional Administrator David Malum of Seattle told the Lewiston Tribune, even though no citation was issued, that doesn't mean Tenney's concerns were not reasonable. An Idaho County Sheriff's investigation has determined the 11-year-old Kuski boy who shot several rounds from a .22 caliber revolver at the feet of a girl on October 3rd did not intend to hurt her. Prosecutors have reduced the original charge against Shane M. Jensen from aggravated assault with a deadly weapon to a misdemeanor charge of discharging a firearm aimed at another person. Jensen has been released to the custody of his mother, but is restricted to home or school, and there may be no weapons in his home. Jensen faces up to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine. A further hearing in the case will take place November 26th. Meanwhile, in Boise, prosecutors are pursuing felony charges against a 15-year-old boy who allegedly pointed a BB gun at a school bus driver and at a 10-year-old girl in a car. More charges are pending as police investigate reports of teens firing on cars. In Vancouver, an 11-year-old boy remains in custody for bringing a gun, ammo, and knives to school on Wednesday last week after he cursed a juvenile court commissioner at a hearing yesterday. Commissioner Jennifer Snyder said the boy's family is not engaging with a mental health evaluation that says the boy has severe anger management problems. The boy told police a voice instructed him to kill a student who had called a friend of his gay. Well, that's it for the KRFP evening report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather from the National Weather Service, it'll be mostly cloudy tonight with a low of 32 degrees. 30% chance of rain tomorrow, mainly before noon, mostly cloudy, high 49. Partly cloudy Thursday night, low 35. Mostly sunny on Friday, high 53. A 20% chance of showers after midnight Friday night, mostly cloudy, low 37. And then rain begins in earnest on Saturday. They're saying 60% chance of showers. No, rather 80% chance of showers with a high of 49. And showers likely through the rest of the weekend as well. Currently overcast and 47 degrees in Moscow. Thanks for listening to the KRFP Evening Report. Coming up next, we have the sustainability segment. And then at 6:30, be ready to tune in and call in your questions for candidates for Mayor Bill Lambert and Nancy Cheney, who will be in our studios to answer questions from you, the listeners. That'll go on for an hour. That's 6:30 to 7:30 tonight, right here on KRFP Moscow. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, become a member of Radio Free Moscow. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843, or you can go to the Radio Free Moscow website to find out more ways to help Radio Free Moscow. Radio Free Moscow is expecting to change its signal to a full power signal on 90.3 FM within a couple days. If you no longer hear us on 92.5, you might check 90.3 and set your presets to listen to Radio Free Moscow's new signal, which is coming up soon. Stay tuned for more. I'm Lee Robartis. Nancy Casey assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. This is KRFP Moscow.